This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. It's your host, Tim Link, and I'm super excited to have you here today. We've got a good friend of the show, as they say, a master novelist, a mystery writer, a thriller writer. He's wears a lot of different hats. And of course, we're talking about Jeffrey B. Burton and his latest book, The Boy in the Wall. Isn't it a crazy title? I want to dig into that and find out what that's all about, too. So we'll come back after this commercial break and talk to Jeffrey a little bit about the book, and then we'll wrap it up with some of his writing masterful ways he goes about doing things so we can all learn from the best. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is critically acclaimed mystery and thriller author Jeffrey B. Burton and his latest book, The Boy in the Wall. Jeffrey, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Tim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. And I know we talked last time about you rocking and rolling on a new book. And I don't recall the name of the book, which I thought was very fascinating, The Boy in the Wall. So tell us a little bit about the book and then how that title came about.
Yeah, basically for folks that haven't read any of my books, I kind of made the human remains detection dogs, cadaver dogs, and their dog handlers are the protagonist. When you read a mystery, maybe the sheriff or, you know, the police chief or the FBI, they'll call in cadaver dogs to search a field or, you know, pond or swamp or something, and they find the body and then they go right back to the main stars. But in my novels, it's the dog handler, and in The Boy in the Wall, he's got Alice, which is an 80-pound bloodhound, and Rex, which is kind of a goofy 45-pound Springer Spaniel. And what came to me, The Boy in the Wall, kind of, not major spoiler since it happens early on, but Corey Pratt is the dog handler, and he's in his early 20s. There's been a little bit of trauma in his life, and his sister is 8 years older, and she's a Chicago police detective. And he runs a dog obedience school, but he also trains cadaver dogs. And so he gets peer pressured. He gets his sister kind of pushes him into going to a elementary school. You know, it's kindergarten through fifth, and kind of show the kids, you know, what dogs can do, what commands they can follow, and just kind of have fun and get them interested. And so he goes and he does that and winds up doing okay. And the principal brings him to the cafeteria afterwards to have some treats and stuff. He's not going to turn down that. And the school is remodeled, just completely remodeled over the summer. And so he's having fun with the principal. He's looking, she bought some really fancy cookies. He's wondering how he can sneak out half a dozen. And the principal says to him, "What are your dogs doing?" And he looks over and the bloodhound is sitting there and facing the new cafeteria wall and kind of patting on the ground. And the Springer Spaniel, Rex, is looking his way and just about to start barking because they've alerted him to something is inside the wall.
Oh boy.
And that's where it begins. So fortunately, the title, The Boy in the Wall, doesn't, 5 pages in, you're already, oh, okay. No big spoiler alert.
But still, it jumps right. I mean, to me, it jumps right at you. The title's self-explanatory. So I was assuming you didn't have a hook from that angle. You know, there's a boy in the wall. Oh my God. So it hits you right in the face. I think the title is fantastic. And then it hits you, you know, okay, this is the story about the dogs finding the child in the wall. Now what happens from there? You know, that's the key and the thriller behind it all, and who did it and when it happened and all the wonderful stuff. And it always starts with cookies. So that's good. It's a,
it's kind of fun is, you know, everybody has something that's in their family tree, you know, not like deep, dark secrets like a Harlan Coben novel, but there's stuff, you know, maybe great grandfather did this or that. Without giving too much away, I thought, well, what if something from the past, from the deep past, from generation ago, collides with the present and the authorities are at a loss because hard for them to find a motive. And so that's kind of where it kind of proceeds to dive into.
Nice. So we have the main cast. I love, first of all, the dogs rule the book, which is always a good thing for me. But any new surprises, any new characters in there from the fans that have been reading your thrillers?
I think for Corey, he's about 22 or 23. And later on in high school, his parents had gone out for a date and wound up in a car accident in Chicago. Sometimes the winter will come in right off the lake. And so that kind of sent him into a pretty much of a funk. And his sister moved back home to try to hope that she could drag him out of his shell. And he was lucky enough to make it through high school. And she got him, well, let's get you, you know, their dad was a veterinarian. You were training dogs with dad. Let's get you. She was trying to, you know, pull the guy out of his shell and got him into doing a dog obedience school. He's not the greatest businessman. He enjoys, you know, working with the dogs, but he needs some help when it comes to kind of business acumen. And so he's gone back to kind of part-time at a community ed school for some computer classes where he meets a girl. And she gets drawn into some of the adventure in the book.
I love that. Now, in this particular series, is this number 3 in the series? Is that correct? Or
yeah, it started with The Dead Years, and then last year was The Second Grave, and then The Boy in the Wall just came out. And I've got, at my feet, I've got my beagle, Milo.
Nice.
And I pretty much model Rex, the Springer Spaniel after him. Just he's goofy and good-hearted, although I don't know if a dozen squirrels or rabbits in the backyard would share that opinion. I think they'd probably say, Milo's a serial killer.
It's a serial killer. He's the sheriff. Watch out around this place. That's fantastic. Well, when I'm reading your books, though, I will say that, you know, even though they're part of a series and you get sort of wrapped into the characters, they are standalone books. You know, you can pick up one and pick up The Boy in the Wall right now and read through it and really have a good thriller, a real good mystery behind, and fall in love with the characters and then work your way back, or, you know, start at the beginning of the series either way.
Exactly. I think I'm pretty good where the book starts and in the first few paragraphs or pages, you meet the characters and their relationship. And so, yeah, you don't really have to read them in order. It's not like, you know, Lord of the Rings or anything like that. It's a standalone adventure with each book. You know, it's kind of like human remains detection dogs. Each time they find human remains, there's going to be some sort of a mystery. And every now and then they wind up opening a Pandora's box with a discovery.
And I love your writing. I love what you do. But I love the fact that, you know, I talk to a lot of great authors out there, including yourself, and they write a lot of different mysteries and thrillers, and they all have their own unique angle. But yours, I love the fact that it starts off, to me, very simple. You know, you got a guy, got to figure out life. Why not train some dogs? And next thing you know, he's knee deep into all these thrillers and mysteries and shenanigans. So it was like it started off, okay, let's find you a good life. And now it's like, oh my gosh, how can I get away from this life? Because it's every time I turn around, it's some sort of chaos going on.
Right. I've made the dogs, you know, Springer Spaniel and a Bloodhound, where he gets into trouble and they're great dogs, but they're not like, you know, a pit bull or German Shepherd or anything. So there's still the fear factor where you're like, oh my goodness. And the dogs aren't really trained as attack dogs or anything like that. But he gets into predicaments, and you hope he and his sister and the dogs will be able to help remove him from the predicaments.
Exactly, exactly. We won't say if they do or not. We'll leave a cliffhanger there for sure. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Jeffrey B. Burton, talk a little bit more about his latest book, The Boy in the Wall, and then we'll talk to Jeffrey a little bit about writing in general. We talked a little bit about how we get to these books, but I want to talk about the whole meat and potatoes behind it all, or the cookies, shall we say. So everybody hang tight. We're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Or wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises as a method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit petliferadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with the critically acclaimed author, mystery thriller author, Jeffrey D. Burton, in his latest book, The Boy in the Wall. So, Jeffrey, when you put together this series or just writing in general, do you go into it with an idea of what the whole theme is going to be about, what you're looking for? Do you pull things from the news, perhaps? Or is it, since in this particular, this is the third in the series, is it a progression that you're writing about? How do you come up with the next greatest thing?
You know, Tim, when I started out, they have the thing with writers, whether you're a plotter, whether you outline everything, and some authors outline it to the, you know, 100th degree. And I started out that way, where I'd have a very loose outline. But as you go along, something occurs to you that's better than anything on your outline. So I'd wind up having a manuscript, but then I'd have to keep updating the outline, because if something occurred to you at chapter 10, well, it's going to affect the progression of the rest of the novel. And so for this series, at least the last couple books, I've become the pantser, an author that goes by the seat of their pants. And I'm lucky that Severn House, my publisher, they believe in me enough where I don't have to give them some, you know, well, here's those, you know, 100 chapters and here's everything laid out ahead of time. You know, I thought years ago, I helped a friend remodel his bathroom, and, you know, we ripped the wall apart and everything. And he had just gotten married and he'd had a bachelor party. So he took all these bizarre gifts that people had given to him at his bachelor party, tossed them inside the wall. And then we put the wall up and he goes, you know, 20, 25 years from now, someone's going to be remodeling. They're going to go, what the hell is this? And so I had the idea, well, the dogs have found shallow graves. They found human remains here and there and, you know, swampy water. And I thought, well, wait a minute. What if the murderer hid the body inside a wall, knowing that, you know, in this case, the school is recently remodeled, and Lord knows that means it'll be another 40 years before they touch anything. And I thought, well, him being cajoled into having to give a presentation and then the dogs tripping over it would be a great kind of a hook. And then I did the seat of the pants thing, where I'll write a chapter and then I'll go, okay, where would this logically kind of go? Where should it go next? And I'll put down a couple notes on where I think it should go. And then the next day I'll pick up from there. And so I've really, I haven't really used an outline in 2 or 3 books now.
That's nice. Do you find it's just because, you know, the progression, you've written a number of books, so it's not needed per se, or is it just sort of a shift in how you go about writing?
You know, there'd been such a big debate in the writing community on the outline versus the seat of your pants. And I'd given the outline a chance. It's not like it really is saving me time, because my outlines were so they were just, you know, bullet points and then just a phrase of what I think a chapter should be about. But, you know, maybe it saved me 8 hours, you know, over the course of a book, which is really nothing. And some people that argue for it, they say, you know, if you outline everything, and when you talk to some of the authors that you probably have, they get into such detail. I've heard some authors talk about how before I even begin chapter one, I have every twist and turn all set up. And some of them have even done the research. And I'm like, well, you know, I'd have to think that as you're going along, I'll think of the character and I'll be like, okay, well, what kind of a car would this particular person drive? And then 2 hours later, I'm coming back to work after having searched dealerships and what kind of used cars, and I'll get lost in some of the research there. But I think that if you have the concept for a book and you kind of dive into it knowing where the first few chapters will go, and then as you go along, you go, well, of course, the next thing would be this. And I think I'm a pantser now, a seat of the pantser. I've migrated to the dark side, I guess.
That's a good one. Well, I could never write where I had to figure out what car the main character would be driving, because that would be it. I'd be buying cars. I would be spending all the time on the Car Guru or whatever sites out there, figuring out how I can, maybe if the book did really well, I could get the latest Jaguar, you know?
yeah. You know, that would be nice. You know, and I'm insane. Like, it takes place in Chicago. I live in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. But I do a ton of research, and if they're meeting at a restaurant, I find myself looking at the menu, and then I'm like, you know, I never. Corey had the number 4 over easy with rye toast. I never really do that much, but I wind up doing enough of the research. And then, you know, you trip over some kind of, maybe there's a medical concept that you don't want to bore the heck out of anyone, but you want to at least have a paragraph where you sound like you're in the, you know, you're kind of knowledgeable about it. And then I do have Milo the Beagle. Periodically, he'll want to just kind of sleep on my lap when I'm writing. And whenever he starts snoring, I go, oh, I better have some action here.
<He's> thinking, keeps you on track. I like it. He's your, make sure you're getting it right. That's what he's there for.
Make sure the pace moves along.
That's it. I love it. From an outliner to a pantser. I'm more of a, crap, it's the deadline writers, what I am.
That's, you know, I hear about writer's block, but I think I have something that's more fear of missing a deadline block, you know.
Mine is can't keep track of a calendar and realize, oh my God, I gotta get it in this week.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll just, you know, probably 80% of the time I'm in a great mood to work on a book, but 20% of the time I'm not really in the mood. So I'll just kind of sludge through it with not the greatest of writings, but I'm moving the ball, you know, 4 or 5 pages forward. And then I'll come back, and when there's something on the page, I can make it better. You know, I suppose like forming clay or something. I can make it better once I get it down on paper. But some days the sludge is just a bit much.
That's it. You know, and I love the fact you bring up research, and I've talked about this quite a few times with different authors on the show, is the fact that, you know, no matter what you're writing, whether we're talking fiction, nonfiction, whether we're talking a children's story, a youth story, whatever it may be, you've got to do your research, because if you get it wrong just by the slight, I mean, if you start talking about thin sliced pizza in a Chicago-based book, they're going to throw it out the window already. So you got to have some deep dish in there. But more importantly, you got to know if you're bringing up a particular building or a particular school location or whatever it may be, you better do your research, because the reader will expect it, because next thing you know, they're from that area or they know it very well, and they'll call you out on it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing how I'll get notes on my website from people that have read it, and I messed up in a book where I gave a rich person 40 acres in a certain really nice suburb of Chicago. And I got an email that said, "Dear Mr. Burton, I really enjoyed your book. However, nobody has 40 acres in that particular suburb," you know, and then sent me some material on how I think the guy that had the most acreage was 12 acres. Yeah, I just hit reply and I'm like, you got me.
I love it. I love it. Well, and things change too. If you're the area I live, it's one of the fastest growing areas in the nation, apparently. And you can tell it, things that were there last week are now, being changed. There's a building going up or a housing complex or whatever it may be. So maybe the guy who owned the 40 acres all of a sudden sold off the 40 acres, but that reader probably would call you out on that too.
Oh yeah.
I know. Mr. So-and-so, and he never sold that property.
And I had in the dead years, I had a bar that was just kind of a dive bar. And I did a lot of research and I found the perfect place that was kind of near the precinct. And, so I used it and a year or two goes by and I get a really nice email saying, hey, have you been to this place? Because I'm a regular there. I mean, it was like Norm from Cheers. I'm a regular. And so I wrote him back and I said, no, but I went to the site and it's in the neighborhood. And I mean, you've got darts, you've got pool, it's everything. It's perfect. It's everything. And then the person that owned the bar sent me a very, very nice email. I sent him a signed book. And if I wind up in Chicago, beer's on them.
That's it, man. It's more excuses to get to Chicago. Can't complain about that.
Research is paying out for me.
That's it. That's it. Next thing you know, I think you need to do some research like in southern France and, some Bordeaux and that.
Right.
And take the bloodhound with you. Why not? In putting together this book, The Boy in the Wall, as well as the rest of the series and everything you're doing with mystery and thrillers, is there a goal that you're looking for? When you set this out, and somebody picks it up, reads through it, thoroughly enjoys it, is there something you're hoping they get from it other than just pure pleasure? Are there any messages, any thing you're wanting to do, or you just want them to have a little bit of fun with the mystery?
I think I probably want them to have a little bit of fun with the mystery. And I think I have a lot of just dog loving followers like myself. So I'm enjoying, my wife and I have managed to kind of always have one or two running around the household for the last 25 years. And I'm not a dog trainer or a handler. I don't have the patience. If you came over, Milo would be jumping up and down on you, driving you crazy. And I've had people come to me and they say, Jeff, you write these dog training books. Can I bring my dog over and drop him off for a week or so? And I'm like, he's going to be 5 pounds heavier and he's going to like go for football.
That's right. Right. If you want him to misbehave even more and be 5 pounds heavier, I love it. That I'm your man.
Oh yeah. So I think I'm writing for folks to just enjoy and, maybe if they're lying on a beach during the summer, to have something that'll keep them flipping pages. And then also just, maybe a love of our canine friends.
That's it. I love it. I love it for sure. Well, everybody pick up a copy. Jeffrey, where can people find out more about the book, The Boy in the Wall, and where you're going to be and what you're doing? What's up next?
Oh, yes. My website, jeffreybburton.com, jeffreybburton.com. And I've got an events, kind of an events calendar where I'm going from Duluth and Minneapolis and Green Bay.
Nice. Nice. Green Bay. And then you need to work your way over to Chicago for free beer. That's what I'm thinking. Get on it. Absolutely. Get your agent involved. Get the editor.
They said they had the book. I'm not sure if they have the part open to their thing behind glass, but I've got to stop by there.
That's it. Sounds like a good place to me.
Oh, yeah.
Well, everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's The Boy in the Wall. It's part of the Chicago Canine Thriller series. You're going to definitely love it. Jeffrey B. Burton. Jeff, thanks for coming back on the show. Always great. Great job with the book as usual.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to chatting with you again somewhere very soon down the road.
Thanks, Tim.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you've got any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, you can go to PetLifeRadio.com and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful hosts and shows. It's a cornucopia of barking fun. That's at PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.